Prepare to be astonished.
It's that time again.
Let's get started.
From the Clatsop County Historical Society, an adventure in history with Matt Burns and Alana Quila.
You should never be allowed to talk to people.
Some people without brains do an awful lot of talking.
And now, with today's adventure, it's Mac and Alana.
Good evening and welcome to an adventure in history. I am so pumped about our guest tonight.
Pumped?
Yes.
You've never said that before.
I haven't. That was a good one, wasn't it? She's a woman of all sorts, like all sorts of crafts.
Many hats.
Many hats. We were already talking about, yes, one of the hats. So we're going to get to that. But
so many hats that when she walks in, like half of them get knocked off because they go higher than the doorway.
So with that, we have Liz Adams here with us tonight. Thanks for being here.
Thanks for having me. I'm really excited about it. I did not wear a hat, but I feel like I should have.
You're wearing your podcast hat right now.
That's right.
Yes.
All right.
But we're going to talk about some of the things that she does for our community.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And regattas this week.
Yes.
You got a regatta.
Yeah. I know, so lots going on. It starts in Warrenton, a lot of the fun activities.
And Mark has been an admiral's aide.
He has.
I have been an admiral's aide.
You have.
I don't know where I was going with that.
Let's just hope you guys never earn admirals.
Yes.
That's way too much work.
Oh, yeah, there's no way.
But it's fun.
I like being the admiral's aide better.
Yeah, yeah, it was fun. Mark was the aide to the Lums, Julie and Lori, so that was a fun one. So there was two admirals that year.
Oh, see, that's twice the troublemaking.
Yeah, it was fun. I mean, they definitely had a lot of fun.
Okay, shall we get right to it? Because
we've
got so much we can talk about. So,
we do.
So the continuing
yes.
Alana segment.
Historic word of the day.
That we're bringing back.
Eye servant.
Eye servant.
Eye servant.
Spell it.
E-Y-E, like your eye, eyeball. Mm-hmm. Servant, S-E-R-V-A-N-T.
So we didn't warn you this was going to be a quiz show.
Yeah, what do you think?
Now we guess. So I'm going to
say it in a sentence, please.
I'm going to take the easy out, and I'm assuming it's some sort of an eye doctor.
Ooh, you're wrong.
I figured I was.
Yeah, I think it's probably something that's completely unexpected. An eye servant.
It is a person who works only when someone's watching.
Ooh.
I know, it's too easy, right?
An eye servant.
So I picked this because of our guest tonight, because she does so much work when people aren't watching.
Oh,
yeah.
Wow. I thought you just grabbed those randomly.
No.
You put far more thought into this show than I do.
I do put thought.
There is a method to
yes.
this, Mac.
I like that.
Yep, but we are continuing. We have another strong woman here today, so I love bringing women on our show and talking about what's happening in our community.
All right. So let's, before we get to that then, since we got so much, let's
yes.
get through the history highlights. These
are,
of course, our conversation starters, icebreakers. If you're stuck on an airplane, maybe something you can talk about.
Okay.
These are things that happen tomorrow, August 7th, 1782. George Washington creates the Purple Heart.
Oh, did he? I didn't realize that.
It goes back.
Right. Okay.
1782. 1820. The first potatoes are planted in Hawaii. I don't think of potatoes in Hawaii.
I don't either. But I also think, can't you grow them anywhere?
I think so. I mean, even on Mars, if we believe that lion Matt Damon.
Oh. Okay.
Odd movie references for 100, Alex. 1888. Oh, I keep forgetting it when I want to like quiz you on what year you think something. I think
1888.
So you already know now. 1888. Thifilis Van Kannel of Philadelphia patents the revolving door.
Oh, interesting.
Bring that name back.
I know. Isn't
I'd
that
like to see that in the birth announcements.
I was torn between the revolving door makes me laugh in 1888 and Philadelphia, but I like the name.
The
too.
Name is very,
the revolving
very unique.
Door.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay, well.
So good for him.
Yeah.
Good for Thifilis Van Kannel. 1947, Norwegian anthropologist Thor Heyerdahl, speaking of good names, completes his 4,300-mile, 101-day journey from Peru to Rauria near Tahiti on the Kon-Tiki, a balsa wood raft, to prove that it could happen.
Wow. That sounds terrible.
Well, he was proven that that's how they could get there way back like a million years
right.
ago.
Still.
But as always, anytime I see the name Thor, I just think, how come Thor in the movies has an English accent?
Right.
Shouldn't he have a Norwegian accent?
Yes.
I'm Thor. I'm here to fight Thanos. All right. Would have been a very different movie. 1959, the first U.S. satellite to photograph the Earth is launched.
Oh, cool.
I love
cool,
the space
cool.
stuff.
Yeah.
1912, Teddy Roosevelt.
Oh, top in, five. In
top five always. Teddy Roosevelt nominated as the Bull Moose candidate for president. He didn't win. Bull Moose. He didn't want to be in the Republican Party anymore because he wasn't the nominee.
Oh, got it.
So I think a little badly of him for that.
Okay.
But anyway. 1990, President George H.W. Bush orders Operation Desert Shield.
Okay.
Not Desert Storm, Desert Shield. But our history highlight of the day, I think, had the most impact on history. 1964, Congress approves the Gulf of Tonkin resolution, giving President Johnson nearly unlimited powers to oppose, quote, communist aggression in Southeast Asia. The resolution marked the beginning of an expanded military role for the United States in the Cold War battlefields of Vietnam, Laos, and Cambodia.
And this was because of the Gulf of Tonkin.
Yes.
Which we learned yes. later was didn't exist.
Yeah. Unlimited power.
Unlimited yeah. power. Do what you got to do.
We learned a lot. I mean, we did learn a lot. Yeah.
So, and this is why, you know, most of the anti-war people blame Johnson instead sure. of Kennedy sent people.
On,
Eisenhower right. probably had some people there.
Right.
But Johnson yeah. Johnson escalates.
Yeah, for sure.
Because he's got an unlimited power.
Right.
So unlimited. Had the most impact on history. Yeah.
You don't make good decisions in that position, right?
They're not always the best things that we highlight.
Right. I know. So. Yes. Nope. That you got that one. So transition.
So something that does not have unlimited power is city council.
That's true.
How is that for a transition?
That is correct.
So this is a newer hat of yours. What even striked your interest?
We're going to jump right into that.
I am curious.
I mean, she's just going straight yeah. for it. She went from unlimited power to...
what were you thinking?
What is wrong with you?
I am always fascinated in this day and age too. Where people vilify yeah. other people so much, and we can't just assume people have the best intentions right. at heart, and maybe we just disagree about some things. I am always fascinated by people that are willing to put themselves out there.
And thank goodness
yeah.
you are.
Yeah, you know, I got called a politician the other day, and I was actually offended. But then I sat and thought to myself, well, I guess I'm some version of that, you know?
You are.
I appreciate highly that the council is a, you know, nonpartisan body. So that's a really exciting thing because I would hate to be really labeled a specific type of politician, which I'm sure is coming.
Right.
I've only been here in this role for, you know, 6 months or so. And so it's interesting to start to hear people label you different things.
See, I don't know yeah. if I feel like 6 months was a long time to go before somebody calling you that or a short time
that
ago.
She heard it.
I don't know.
Yeah. I don't know either. Yeah.
So what was it that, I mean, so prior to that, what sparked your interest in running?
You know, that question's come up quite a bit, and I really have always had an interest, even as a younger child, teenager, young woman. I've always had an interest in participating on this level as a city councilor or a county commissioner or something that's connected to your area, that's connected to change that you can actually enact yourself and be a part of. I really kind of come from that that 90s, like, push, that rock the vote, kind of like being a teenager and really being interested in democracy and interested in change and interested in how that works, and that big push kind of in that, like, early 90s, mid 90s, where they were really trying to get young people voting and interested in politics. I always was interested. I grew up in a very political household, very aware household, but I didn't really get interested to the point where I wanted to actually do something until about, I'd say, 6 to 8 years ago. And that's when I started to notice a significant housing shortage start happening in our area. Mm-hmm. And that started to really spark my interest in why we were developing policies that we were, what was happening to our housing, what was going on with our inventory, what were the changes, and what were the things that were creating those changes. So housing really was the big push for me to be on council at this time.
Interesting.
So to back up a little bit, because I'm fascinated that as a young adult, a teenager, you're interested in local politics instead mm-hmm. of national. So what prompted that? Why was that a focus of city council or county commission? And that's where things can really happen.
You know, I was taught that from a young age. My father was a union man. So I grew up in a very union-directed household. And I remember a lot of conversations and talks and reading things in the paper about local representatives and lobbying for different types of changes within the union, and that happened with the support of local quote-unquote politicians and up the chain up to, you know, the governor. And so that was always something that I felt where change actually could occur is at that small level.
So you're from the area.
Yeah.
You said as good as it gets. I mean, you were a toddler here.
I was 2 years old. I'm an Oregonian for sure. I was born in Coos Bay, North Bend. And again, my dad was a longshoreman. He worked down in the port down there. That was a pretty active port at the time, similar to what ours was. And he wanted to move somewhere to the country. And he had a friend who worked up here. And he said, "You got to see this place, Astoria. You gotta get there. This is where you want to raise your kids." And he found a piece of land out in Swenson, and there we were raised.
And have you stayed ever since?
I haven't. I've gone back and forth. It's funny, you know, now that I have children who are leaving the nest, I'm pushing them out, you know, very, very quickly. But I try to think back to that time for me, and I really loved being here. You know, a lot of people, when you hit a certain age, you want to get out and you want to see things. And luckily, I had gotten out and seen a lot of things and traveled quite a bit as a young child and young woman. And then I had moved to a couple different places and lived in other places. But when I decided to have a child, I came back to raise my child here.
I love that.
And I've been here ever since.
So moving here at 2, you really probably don't have strong memories of Coos Bay.
I don't have a lot of memories of Coos Bay at all. Yeah, okay. It was pretty.
So we've talked to a lot of people that grew up in Astoria or Seaside or Warrenton. I don't know if you've ever talked to anybody that grew up in Swenson. Yeah. So what's it like being a kid there? I mean, where do you hang out? What do you go and do with your friends?
Yeah, what do you do?
Yeah, it's funny. You know, we have these jokes. Either you're from Napa or you're from Swenson, or are you from Brownsmead? Are you from Burnside? You know, all these little nooks and crannies of the county. And, you know, you're out in the country. You're doing stuff in the country. A lot of kids farm out there. A lot of kids are outside. A lot of kids have the ability to be on property where they can explore and have a different, very different lifestyle than living in the city.
Did you have animals?
I did, yeah. I was part of the old FFA.
Oh, wow.
And 4-H and all those incredible programs that sponsor kids and youth and young adults.
So what was your favorite or least favorite?
Or both.
Right.
Yeah, it was always difficult, you know, raising an animal and then showing an animal and then potentially selling an animal.
It seems so sad.
It's a really, challenging experience.
I choose to believe, like the Simpsons episode, that cows are happy running around. They run into some kind of a box, and then I'm handed a hamburger. And I don't need to know anything in between that.
Yeah, don't tell me anything else. No. Yeah.
No. So where'd you go to high school? So Astoria High School?
So I went to Napa High School.
Napa High School.
Yeah, okay. I had an incredible experience. I feel like I was in this very interesting, magical time in the 90s. I graduated in 95, so I'm 45 years old. I feel like I grew up in this really... with teachers and faculty that were really a little bit ahead of the time for what we were doing. We were able to be involved in theater productions that now maybe they would potentially have some different thoughts about. Really heavy themes, you know, we were much more trusted as young people.
Nice.
It definitely wasn't like the 70s or anything like that, but I think it was pretty advanced. Being that a lot of our teachers and faculty were really advanced, intelligent people.
Mm-hmm. Any shout-outs or ones that made a specific memory burn?
Man, of course Susie Brown, you know, she's our gal. But yeah, there was quite a few that were really monumental in helping, and also parents too. There was a lot of really great parents that were involved in kind of this co-op way of raising raising our group. You know, the 90s kids are these really specific generational kind of kids, right? So
Gen X
all the way, yeah.
Not millennials.
You're in a millennial bent the last few weeks. And you're not an anti-millennial.
I just want to make sure that nobody is, you know, confused.
Yeah, Gen X all the way. I think there's a lot of things about being a Gen Xer that are really specific and have contributed to me as an adult.
And what did you want to do with your life then? So what did you, at that point, think you were going
to
do?
Well, at first I thought I was going to go in the Peace Corps. I was really interested in that. And then I wanted to be an anthropologist.
Ooh, that sounds fun.
And unfortunately, I didn't really have a lot of parental support to urge me into education. So I actually wanted to become a massage therapist, which is a really long, roundabout way to get to where I am today. But my guidance counselor at the time thought that that was a really bad profession.
Oh.
In the 90s, you know, massage therapy was still kind of getting some traction, moving from a lot of perceptions about therapeutic touch and what that actually was. It wasn't considered medical yet. It was still kind of had this new wave kind of feel to it. And there just wasn't a lot of programs that felt like it really solidified it as a profession. And so I was kind of discouraged from doing that.
So how many years later, because you did say, I mean, the circuitous route of getting here, how many years later then did you open up your...
My studio's been downtown for about 6 years.
Wild Roots.
Yeah.
Plug there.
So seven years I've been massaging. And so, long roundabout way.
And when you started that 7 years ago, were you still thinking about what that guidance counselor had said? Or?
Yes, I still think about it. Yeah.
Interesting. Yeah. Isn't that?
Yeah, I was thinking about it because I have a child who just graduated high school. And I was thinking about that impact that one person can have to encourage education post high school for children
or discourage
or trade schools or just any type of secondary education where that they can then build skills, learn a trade or, you know, go back to school and how important that can be for somebody later in life to have those skills. Yeah.
I'm amazed though. It as a high school junior, senior that, this is what you're thinking about. What made you think about it?
Yeah, you know, my parents were kind of hippies. They were from the Bay Area. And my mom, you know, was one of those long-haired kind of bell-bottomy, you know, have your baby at home kind of gals. And so I was raised in a pretty pretty natural way. We canned, you know, we had a huge garden. We just kind of had a really holistic kind of lifestyle in that way. So I always knew the benefits of alternative therapies.
And were you that aware when this guidance counselor is telling you that's not a real career? Are you kind of like, yes, it's a real thing and it's going to be a real thing?
You know, memories are hard because you think back and then you wonder, am I thinking back with this brain or how do I think back with the brain that I had then?
Right.
That could be challenging, right? But I think I knew then that it was bogus, that he was he was just not, you know, he was an older person. He probably had some very different experiences, understanding what massage therapy was. And
obviously never had a massage.
And obviously never had a massage.
So you offer much more than just massage therapy. Yeah. So talk about what you originally started with when you opened your studio and then what it is today. Because it has changed so much in those 7 years too.
Yes. Well, I'll blend these two worlds together here. So I was at a very challenging time in my life. I was about to turn 40. You know, I could see it on the horizon. I was getting divorced. I had one kiddo who was graduating soon. So there was all these like really epic things. And I had just recently lost my sister. My sister had died, my little sister. And I kind of thought to myself, well, this is it. Like, you know, you always wanted to do that. Just do it. Just finish it. Go back and get it done. And I did. And then I started looking for housing after living in Warrenton for a significant amount of time. And housing was even then, very difficult to find, very expensive. And I thought, I'm just going to move to Portland. I'll just move to Portland. I'll work somewhere there. Maybe it's good for my kids to be in a different school setting. Maybe there'll be more opportunities in a larger city. And I was having lunch with my ex-husband right next door to the, where the studio is now. And we came out and we were talking and he made a joke, you know, oh, you should open your place over there. And it was the Mary and Louise Flavelle building. And it was a total dump. And this was, you know, before anything had even been touched in there. And I looked at him and, you know, we had this joking way. And I said, well, maybe I will. And then before I knew it, I was on the phone calling Marcus and Michelle Liotta and saying, hey, what's going on with this building? And the next day, I went and looked at it.
Oh, and it's beautiful. Tall ceilings, skylights, you have natural light.
Yeah, it's an incredible building. I sometimes leave there. And it's funny, a lot of people who work or have businesses or own some of these historic buildings, they really know that they have their own identity, right? They have their own character. And I remember the first time I left work and I walked towards the door and I said, thanks, girl. Good day. And then I thought to myself, oh no, I'm one of those people who recognizes that this building has now come back to life and is so grateful that there's all this activity and happiness. People walk in and they say, oh, it feels so good in here. It's not just the space I've created, it's the building itself.
Mm-hmm. I love that. But you have classes.
We have movement classes. We have massage. We just put in some soaking tubs. Yes. We've got these really great old cast iron tubs that were being taken out of some historic Victorian homes. And we put them up in there. We have an infrared sauna. We have a vinyl lounge where you can come in and just relax and listen to records while you're waiting for your treatment.
Have tea.
Yeah. It's just a really nice Astorian experience. People sometimes will call it a spa, and I'm offended. I say, it's not a spa. And it's not that I don't love spas. They're incredible, right? But this is a little different. This is more like being in the casualty of your living room and being warm and comfortable and also being treated.
Yeah, it is very comfortable and very relaxing. But the better classes, I mean, she offers these fun classes. I'm not going to think of remember.
Yeah, we do some yoga. Yeah, we do. Most of our stuff is Pilates based. Yes. On the training, and we do some bar classes. We do a foam rolling stretching class. We do a drumming class.
So without naming names. Youngest person that participates and the oldest person that participates.
Oh, yeah. So that's pretty much SOMAC. Yeah. We're all about inclusivity. That's the mission of the entire
organization. Okay, wait. I just said old and she looked at me.
Yeah.
Well, I think you just got yourself invited to a class.
I feel like the oldest person who's come to a class is probably in their 70s. And the youngest is, we have, you know, little kids come with their parents.
Babies. She has newborns.
Sometimes we'll have little tiny babies. And
I was going to guess 2 to 80.
Yeah. I'd say 2 days old. I mean, she has like little babies. Yeah. But yeah, I was hoping you were going to talk about that because when you're teaching and when other people are teaching too, you make it so that you can adapt the exercise routine to that person's ability.
Yeah.
I feel like that's really unique.
It is unique, I think, because a lot of times, you know, you don't want to go to a class because you're concerned about whether you can keep up or whether if it's going to be hard enough. So both ends of the spectrum. So we teach to all levels by offering what we call options. I think saying the word modification has kind of a negative connotation to it. So we use the word options and we layer things so that there's plenty of different options that you can add on to or take away and have just as great of an experience.
And there's no yelling at you.
This isn't like
some of those classes. I mean, there is sometimes yelling, but it's like cheering.
It's a wooing. It's a bit of a woo. More of a
woo doesn't count as yelling.
And then I love to, so I haven't been able to make it, but they've actually done bar at the bar.
Yeah, we have one coming up.
So bar class at a bar.
Yeah, we're going to be at Obelisk.
Love that.
Yeah, and then we're going to also be at Reach Break. We'll finish off our August class at Reach Break at the end of the month. And
So we've got about 4 minutes, so I want to make sure we do give... Yes. Somebody wanted to track you down and find some of these classes, website, phone number, yes. How do they find you?
Yeah, you can find us on the socials, of course, Wild Roots Astoria and wildrootsastoria.com, and it'll take you to our scheduling platform. It'll show you all the offerings that we have. You can email, you can come by and check us out.
You can book the massage online or any of those add-ons that she talked about, the sauna, the tub. Mm-hmm.
You could do those as things. Standalones, too. Mm-hmm. Yeah, you don't have to come in for... Right. We also offer a really short massage, which we cater to our working class and our service industry folks. It's called the Breadwinner, and it's a 45-minute massage, and it's affordable and targets specific areas and is really dedicated to the folks who are out there on the front lines working hard in Astoria.
Best massage that I've had. I've had massage. I've gone to massage for like decades. Mm-hmm. So, yes, definitely worth it to get into her. She's hard to get in though, but she does have other providers I've gone to that have been outstanding. So.
Yeah, Astoria is has a wonderful bodyworking community, and we're very lucky to have Alicia and Stephanie as well.
This is one of those days I wish we were on camera as well, because Alana's very animated, so excited. Very excited.
I love all the things that Liz offers. So Liz, what would you say to other women in our community who are interested in getting involved? Where should they start? And maybe they're not quite ready to run for office, but they want to get plugged in their community.
Yeah, I think they need to start by just becoming aware of what's really going on. You know, tuning into county commission meetings, tuning into city council meetings, tuning into some of the committees. Get it on the websites. Take a look at what the county commission offers. Take a look at what city council offers. The Port of Astoria. Look at these entities that are the ones making the decisions about our community. Mm-hmm. Look at some of these other elected boards that you can participate in that may have something that you can offer that's not currently there. And start to get involved by just reading and understanding what's happening in your community.
So what was one of your forgive me that I already heard you answer this once before at a Rotary meeting, but what was your biggest surprise after becoming city councilor? Because I do suspect one of the best lines I've heard once was somebody that was running said, "I don't know what I don't know." Oh, and I always thought that was a great answer because it's easier to sit here and critique what I read in the paper or I hear on the radio and then to actually be one of five people.
Right.
It's a very different thing. So what was a surprise for you?
A big surprise that Andy Davis, also a new counselor, and I both agreed on is that there's less collective communication because we can't communicate with more than a certain amount of us. We can't have serial meetings where we talk about one thing to one person, one thing to the next person. You know, there's very clear rules about how we conduct business. Mm-hmm. And I thought there would be a lot more collaborative, like, work sessions where we'd be sitting down and really hashing out these issues and getting our opinions out there. And really, that has to happen at the council meetings. That doesn't get to happen anywhere else. So you have to be prepared and ready and have all of your information in front of you, your research done, so that you can speak to the group with that communication that you wish you could have had in a different format, but you have to do it right there at the dais.
That is true. I mean, it's not private, right?
Yeah, it's not. And people think that, you know, there's a lot of opportunities where they don't know what's going on, and there really isn't.
Oh, I love it. Liz, thank you so much for your service to our community. I love all of the avenues of support that you provide to women and others in Clatsop County. So thank you for that. And thank you for serving in public office. That is important. And it's important for women to have a voice in those capacities.
Even if somebody thinks you're a politician.
Exactly. You go, girl. Man,
I don't know if, maybe I'll own that soon, huh?
Well, thank you so much. Thanks for listening. Go make some history, and we will catch you next week.
Thank you for joining us for an adventure in history. An Adventure in History is created and produced by the Clatsop County Historical Society and brought to you by KMUN.